When do I sleep?
Yeah, you sleep. Do you sleep much?
Yeah, 6 hours.
That's good. You doing better than me. I can tell you that.
But I'm able to go on no sleep.
Yeah. Don't say you're able to. Say you go on no sleep.
Right.
Whether you're able to or not. All right, we ready? 94.7 The Wave. Good morning. Thanks for waking up with us today. I'm Pat Prescott. Delighted to welcome back to our studios the one and only George Lopez. Yes. Getting all set to host the Playboy Jazz Festival once again this summer.
This might be even 7 years, possibly, since this might be the seventh year. And I have to say that, and everybody that goes and supports the Jazz Festival, it's been great to see it be revived. These last maybe 3 or 4 years have been really incredible. Great, you know, Darlene Chan does a great job of all of the talent and putting everything together. But the Hollywood Bowl is maybe, if not the greatest place, one of the greatest venues ever. And you know, you've been there.
Yeah.
That it gets better earlier and the smell of marijuana gets there sooner. And everybody's having a great time from 3 o'clock till 11 o'clock.
Now that we're legalized, oh, my goodness, who knows what it's going to be like.
You know what,
like,
but I have to say something for Latinos. We didn't know it was illegal because it was never ours, even when they found it. That's not mine. And our grandmothers have done all, you know, we missed the boat again. I think we missed the boat on Airbnb to have to rent out a room to somebody you don't know and charge them money. Uber to
instead
take somebody,
of letting them stay free like we've been doing.
That's
forever.
Right. Uber driving somebody someplace who you don't know to a place they don't know. So all of those things Latinos could have been on the cusp of. And my grandmother used to stick marijuana leaves in an old tequila bottle with alcohol, and then it would take the THC out of it, and she would use alcohol on parts of her body. And now that's kind of like the CBD world.
Exactly. It is.
Yes,
forward thinking. We certainly are.
Forward thinking, yes.
But while all these great things were happening, these great technological changes, one thing that has not changed is that whole Hollywood Bowl situation.
Beautiful.
Except to a, they've made some little improvements, if you can believe that. What I love about that place, George, is how it can... Such a huge place can be so intimate, and you just feel so close, not only to what's going on the stage, but to everybody that's kind of in there.
Yeah. You know, from the tip top at night, you know, Tower Power was there, you know, Sheila E., whenever she's there.
And she's back.
And she's back. And Boss Skaggs is going to be amazing to see outside, you know, at that place. And, you know, it stays full till the end. And that's really a testament to all of the great talent both days. You know, Sunday, both days are going to sell out, but Sunday sells out. And then there's a little bit of tickets for Saturday. But you would think Saturday would be the first one to go. But it's always Sunday, and it's always, always great. And all of the advice that I've ever received about how to maintain a proper backstage personality, all out the window. My room is it has the most alcohol, the loudest music, the most, you know, other things that people enjoy, and the coldest ice in any of the, I mean, it's just great. This is great.
George Lopez with us in the studio, getting ready for the Playboy Jazz Festival, coming back to the Hollywood Bowl Saturday, June 8th and Sunday, June 9th. A terrific lineup for us all this year. And, you know, while there's a party going on in the bowl, I don't know if people realize how much of a party, as you just alluded to, there is going on backstage, because there's so many moving parts to the dressing rooms. You're moving people in and out of the dressing rooms.
Right.
They've got the place to eat upstairs with the craft services upstairs, which is very high level craft services.
It
I
is
might
high
add,
level
very nice. You should do like a little documentary of backstage at the Playboy.
I think it would be. I think if you know, unauthorized or authorized, you're gonna get the same. You're gonna get the same things, you know. And but yeah, you're exactly right. The sliding of, you know, if somebody's playing at 4, the person that's playing at 6 is using that same dressing room, and then they leave at 8. And you know what you really see, though, is you see Quincy Jones coming back and hanging out. All of the performers who have known each other for decades, you know, Ramsey Lewis and things that you think you would never see, old horn players that played with, you know, the Supremes and Motown. And what that is, what jazz is able to do, what a lot of other genres of music unfortunately can't accomplish is that they stay friends. There's not a competition in any of them. They always are legitimately happy to see each other, and they have decades of friendship and love that you can see.
Yeah, the other thing that's really cool is that in addition to having these great names and music that we have loved over the years, there's always somebody you never heard of.
Right.
You know, don't stay home. Come right. on time. Because very often the people who are coming on early are some of the people you'll be introduced to for the first time. People like Parlor Social.
Right.
Who just turned it out.
Parlor
Social. That was last year, wasn't
amazing.
It?
Amazing. Yeah, the Jones family a few years ago, Parlor Social during the day. Great stuff. And, you know, you think that, you know, in people's minds, they think, well, you know, as it gets dark, it's going to, the talent will get better. It's better from, and which is great that they do both days. They have, you know, public school, the bands play, come out and play. And
which is also awesome.
Amazing.
And what a great experience for these kids to be able to say, I played at the Hollywood
right,
Bowl.
Absolutely.
That's why we need to show up so we can be there
yes,
for them.
Yes, show up, everybody. And show out.
What are you really looking forward to this year?
You know, I like to see, you know, Boss Gags as Sheila and like you said, somebody that's going to come out and blow the doors off that no one expects to see is great. You have the list there, right?
I do have the list here. And you know who I'm looking forward to? Maceo.
Maceo
Parker.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
That's James Brown's Maceo.
That's James Brown's Maceo.
Yeah. Wow. Maceo Parker,
let's
yes.
pick that up. You know who I'm excited about? Maceo.
Maceo Parker. Oh, man. That's how about that? How about you get to see James Brown's right-hand man?
I'm telling you.
Maceo Parker.
I am telling you. There is also going to be a celebration for Ndugu Chancellor, one of the greatest drummers and percussion players ever, straight out of L.A. And Patrice Rushen is going to be the music director for
Amazing.
That. They got Ernie Watts, Terry Lynn Carrington, Doc Powell, Byron Miller, who played with George Duke for so many years.
Yeah.
T.C. Carson, who not only is a great actor and a funny guy, but a terrific singer. He'll be there, too.
Wow. That
That's going to be so
that's
cool.
That's incredible, isn't it?
And somebody I want you to look out for, George, is a group called Jazz in Pink. It's an all-female ensemble. They'll be wearing their pink. And they've got Karen Bridges. I'm sorry. What is Karen's name? They've got Karen Briggs. Karen Briggs is a great violinist who played with Yanni, and this is an incredible all-girl group. So look out for them.
Yeah,
definitely.
Amazing. Can't wait.
It is going to be a great afternoon of music, and I'm sorry. I know you all are videotaping this, but you'll be able to edit like this, right? Okay. So I know, as always, it's great to have you here, George. And in addition to what's going on with the Playboy, you got a lot happening in your life. Touring this summer, brand new movie coming out. Tell us about El Chicano. I saw the trailer for this.
Yeah, El Chicano is almost like a, well, I would say he's a superhero. He's human. He can't fly. But what he does is he protects the community that he lives in from the evil in the community. You know, he's kind of what a neighborhood watch would be if the neighborhood watch could throw down, you know, could really fight.
You know, in the trailer, you call him the ghetto grim reaper.
The ghetto grim reaper who looks for the evil in the neighborhood. And, you know, this part came to me. Amy Garcia, very talented actress. Lucifer, she was on my show the last season, you know, says to me, you know, there's this script that you should read, this captain they want you to play, and very dramatic, I think, you know, and I was like, you know, okay, didn't read it, got down to almost the end, I read a little bit of it, and it was very powerful, you know, and Ben Bray Hernandez, who's director, and I are from the same town, San Fernando Valley, he grew up in San Fernando, I grew up in San Fernando Mission Hills, so rarely would you see a director and a guy, two guys come out of the same neighborhood, to do a movie that he's directing. And you know, my part is I aged 20 years in the movie where I start out as a patrolman, then I end up as a captain of my own precinct in Los Angeles. And no one really knows who El Chicano is, but what he is, it's almost like, Pat, if somebody handed it down to somebody in the 70s, when that guy felt he was a little too old to still be as effective as he would pick a successor and there have been successors through the decades, so the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and no one knows if I was an El Chicano at one point or another guy that you see in the neighborhood, but because it's very covert. And, you know, Raul Castillo plays, you know, a detective, and then we find out that he becomes El Chicano. And it's not all Latino, but I believe it would be the first time a Latino superhero in a movie this with such a wide release. So I think everybody will like it. And, you know, it's got a lot of really good people that I'm sure you've seen in other movies. And we expect it to do very well.
Yeah, and it's something really different for you. How did you approach this?
Well, you know, dramatic.
There's no jokes here.
No, there's no jokes. You know, I did a movie, River Runs Red, with Taye Diggs that was extremely powerful about parents, you know, losing their children to, you know, police, violence, and, you know, and the older I get, you realize, you know, I had a friend of mine, Kenny Ramirez, who I grew up with, and we lost him to a police officer involved shooting, and nothing gets closed. So when you think about him in an acting sense, you can relive all of that emotion of never getting a chance to say goodbye, of seeing a guy that you grew up with every day that you would never see again. So in the dramatic thing for me, I'm not sure if I would consider myself Juilliard, but I believe that the school of hard knocks and the unfortunate loss of people in your life can get you emotionally to a place where maybe somebody from Juilliard cannot get to.
Yeah, that's true. Life gives you something to draw on.
Yeah,
in those
it really
situations,
does.
Real
and
does.
In the good and the bad. I mean, you know, the sun comes up. Today's a beautiful day, and people unfortunately come in and out of your lives, and it doesn't make it less painful. But you really do have to understand to appreciate every second and everybody that's in your life, because they will not be there or you won't be there forever.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Instead of looking back, like you said, look forward and spend meaningful time with those people and tell them how you feel about them every day.
Exactly. You know, and talking about this subject here kind of just brings to mind something that just touched me so deeply recently right here in Los Angeles, and that was the loss of Nipsey Hussle and that incredible memorial service that they had for him last week.
I'm not sure if any foreign dignitaries or anybody that has passed has ever received such an incredible amount of adulation, respect, of a show of love, a forced motorcycles riding alongside the hearse, people on the side of the road, and
peaceful and respectful
and peaceful
and really thinking about. There was a lot that was said that I just thought that was so important at such a sad occasion,
right,
for the sense of hope that was being transmitted just because of who this young man was and the things he accomplished. Did you know him?
I met him a couple of times at the Laker games. You know, he came over and said hello one time, 5 or 6 years ago. I wasn't really sure who he was. Somebody said that was Nipsey Hussle. So, you know, I would see him. We'd say hello to each other and, you know, wave. And seeing him in the, you know, president's room and coming in and out of Staples Center. But, you know, when someone goes, most of the things that they'll say are very complimentary. And I will say, as I was watching the sadness of that day and the sadness of the memorial, that was genuinely one person that what everybody said about him was exactly true. That guy had soul, he had heart, he cared about his community. He was what we all aspire to be in this great country, come from nothing and make a way for yourself and make a way for your family and lead and show the way. And he did that. So the loss is, you know, every loss is painful. This one will hurt and will go deeper because it's senseless. It should not have happened, and it should not happen to somebody. You know, can you imagine Bill Gates losing his life at 33 while he's trying to launch Microsoft or Elon Musk? But we lose somebody like Nipsey and his children and his wife lost, you know, forever, and a bit of the community lost, because now that area there that has all the flowers and the candles, those are going to go away and the hurt is going to stay. But what's going to has to remain is if he inspired you, if he motivated you, if he made you think about something good, take that into the future and do something for yourself. The best way that, you know, we could honor him and the community could honor him is to just stop hurting each other senselessly and stop mistreating people and stop mistreating women and stop mistreating kids. That's the honor and the legacy that I think anybody who you look to as a positive role model would love to see.
And he was somebody who was trying to bring the community together.
Absolutely.
Working with the police, trying to get gang members to talk to each other. I think, as you said, to honor his memory by continuing these things, as that the pastor who was brilliant at the end of this thing said, you know, about the marathon, he said, it's a marathon, but it's a relay. You got to pass the baton to the next person, we've got to continue to do all of these things. I was really kind of captivated by the whole thing.
Absolutely. I was very disappointed in the city, you know, coming from Los Angeles and talking to Big Boy and talking to Snoop about, you know, what happened. It's very disappointing that it happens in your city because, you know, I'm from here. You kind of, you know, it's reflected all over the world. People think less of Los Angeles, but I think it redeemed itself at the memorial, and for all those guys to be together in a room to bring, you know, a couple of gangs together that are mortal enemies is a great tribute as well.
Yeah. And on the less serious side, but certainly equally as shocking, Magic Johnson stepping down.
Yeah.
Is the Laker Magic gone?
Well,
woof.
You know, when Dr. Buss left us, he left us in a bit of a man who kind of was the alpha at Staples. And Jim Buss wasn't the answer. And Kobe, in 2010, our last championship, had a couple of years, got hurt. D'Antoni coming in and running Kobe hard at in his early 30s didn't help Kobe. Kobe wants to do it all, and Buss tearing his Achilles was bad. That team after 2010 should have stayed together in itself for two or three more years. And, you know, with LeBron, who is incredible, but he'll be going into his 16th year. And time is the ultimate champion because it never loses. And, you know, when you can make a guy who is 100% and 1,000% positive and happy every day say that he wasn't having fun, we need help.
Yeah, and people are trying to analyze this whole thing, but I don't think it was any deeper than that. I think Magic was like, this job is hard. He found out this is a really hard job.
When he coached 20 years ago, was the beginning of cell phones. I remember he grabbed somebody, Nick Van Exel's cell phone that rang during practice, and threw it across the practice court. Rarely do you have a job where you can laugh and have fun and be successful. Being the general manager or player operations of the Lakers right now is not that position.
Yeah,
it can
no
be.
But it
is not right now. And there's too many good teams in the NBA right now. So we're a little bit under the gun there.
Yeah, but it probably is the best thing that could happen, because if he doesn't want to do the job, then it's time to get somebody else in there. And I love Jeannie.
Yeah, absolutely.
As much as I love her, the buck does stop with her. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's time to stop looking back at our past greatness and start looking at the pool of people who are available take these jobs. Because there's some really good general managers out there and presidents.
I've loved the Lakers my whole life. I sit courtside when I go. This year was the only time, Pat, that I thought about moving back 10 rows. Kidding.
I was going to say, I'll take your seat.
I might be too close to this game. It hurts from here. I might have to go up in the back up there where the Laker band is.
And you're at the game.
Hide. I'll go hang out in Hyde and watch the game.
You don't have to hide. Let me just say, I think that a lot of Laker fans are kind of wimpy. You know, I'm from New York. I'm a Knicks fan. Mm. What have I had to cheer for since 1972? Come on now. You all, look at all the banners up there. It's going to be okay. We have LeBron James. And I will say something, some very good young players, too.
Absolutely, some very good young players.
You know?
And we've had number one picks that we've not taken full advantage of.
For real, we
need to be smarter.
We made some dumb trades, too.
If we're going to be this bad and have picks, the picks have to be that much better than what your normal pick. Good basketball heads have to get together and pick some good players.
Exactly. And just bring in some really top management people and let them do their job.
My man this year went into the game he was wearing his practice shorts below and his game jersey on top. He had black shorts on. I've never seen that happen. Michael Beasley, I think that's who it was. They tapped him on the shoulder. He ran off the court, had to run back in the locker, put the proper shorts on, and come back.
Yeah. We've seen some funny things this year. Yeah. And some unfunny ones, too.
Some funny things and unfunny things. But it's a great game. You know, Nipsey loved basketball. He loved the Lakers. And, you know, the Lakers loved him.
Yeah.
And a lot of all the basketball players had respect for him. And as well as, you know, thousands and millions of people who loved him and his music. But now, more importantly, they know a little bit about
him. Oh, no question. About the man and what a great man
himself, yes.
And his family and friends, too, are very impressed by all of them and the articulate speeches they made. But speaking of Nipsey Hussle again, I was surprised how many people did not know who Nipsey Russell was. You know, I mentioned this to my boyfriend's kids who are in their late 20s. And I said, do you know where that name came from? Because his mom was a fan of Nipsey Russell and liked the name Nipsey. And they added that to the hustle. But, you know, Nipsey Russell, and we started going back and looking at some of his stuff on YouTube and were just reminded how brilliant this dude was.
He did the rhymes. He would...
he was like the Rodney Dangerfield of rhymes.
Yes, he was. I'm trying to remember. I knew one... he said, I'm going to my girlfriend's house, and she can surely bake. Tonight I'm going to her house to watch her shake and bake. Something like that. Like, you know, he always had one that said,
always
go to rhyme.
Always had a rhyme. Yeah. And he was a groundbreaking dude, too. I mean, he was like the first African-American who was like on a panel of one of the game shows.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, he integrated that whole thing. And you know, it bothers me a little bit that we get so far away from understanding the past and the people whose shoulders everyone stands on. I would love it. I tell these kids, you got that phone in your hand. Look up some of this stuff.
Look up a little bit of that. You know, in the change of Hollywood, which you see a lot more now. But you know, I've been around it for 30 years, and it's gone leaps and bounds. So. For everybody out there who is trying to be an actor, a writer, a producer, or a performer, a dancer, get on your phone and go back and Google some people. Look it up. Who
exactly
were the best dancers in the 90s and the 80s? And do your homework.
You can find a whole lot more than we can find.
Absolutely. That's right.
Now, I know you are touring all over the place, a lot of touring this summer. And I was kind of curious, because I know you do this a lot. What are your most favorite and least favorite things about being on tour?
Well, you know, I'm a single man, and I've been on the road since 1984. So to have almost like a surf and turf existence where you can be home and then you can be in a better hotel. The worst things about being on the road were before in the 90s and 80s when you were staying at places where, you know, I just bought a Sony Vaio computer, and I was on the road in New Jersey staying at a motor lodge that I went to the front desk and said, man, I left my key. I don't know where it is. He said to me, lean in with your shoulder and turn the knob at the same time and the door will open. How's that?
That's a classy place.
And then I've gone to places where you had to put the key in late at night and knocked on the door, and the bell desk manager, you know, kind of sleeps in the back, and the guy goes, if you don't get out of here, I'm calling the police. I said, I'm staying in the hotel. But when the hotels got better, the food got better, unless you've been on the road, you know that some stories can only happen on the road, and they'll never happen at home.
Yeah, yeah.
Charlie Murphy, you know, we lost him a couple of years ago. We were on that tour. Some of the biggest laughs were, I would cry laughing, was around him in markets, you know, where the Indiana Pacers play, sitting back there on a rented couch, just drinking Diet Coke and talking about stories. Like, those things would have never happened. So great moments, you know, everybody's got great moments, and, you know, we still continue. As long as you're alive, you can, all those moments, every moment can be great.
Exactly. And some of these comedy clubs will have an apartment or something, right? And
yes.
Places where people stay. I hear stories from comics sometimes about some of these apartments.
You would never want to use any of the condiments. If you go to the market and you come back and you go, oh, there's ketchup, you know, we don't need to buy it. You throw everything away. and don't flip the
sanitize everything.
It's bad. It's bad.
Sanitize everything.
But nothing. It's bad. But nothing is impossible. I mean, you know, I was out there when it was snowing, raining, sleet. Nobody would show up, and didn't give up. And I'm sitting here with you, host of the Playboy Jazz Festival, and doing movies and still doing good things.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. I know you'll be touring, as I said, all over, and a couple of those weekends.
It's my 40-year anniversary this year, June 4th, right around. So come to Playboy and help celebrate my 40-year anniversary. The first time I ever went on stage was June 4th, 1979. I was a senior at San Fernando High, and I told my grandmother I wanted to be a comedian so I could make the world laugh, and she said, just show them your baby pictures or that time you cut your own hair.
She could have been on stage.
She really could have been on stage.
So I know that you're going to be doing your thing this summer in June, July, and August at the Mirage.
I am at the Mirage in Las Vegas.
Great. That's good. We got to come catch you there. Do you like performing in Vegas?
Yeah. You know what? I'm kind of digging it. I don't go anywhere during the day. It's very difficult to go anywhere. But I like the shows. It's tough to go, you know, it's almost like if you saw Mickey Mouse outside of Disneyland, you'd go, hey, that's Mickey Mouse. I mean, naming the show after me and being so visual all of the time makes it very difficult to go salt and pepper in my hair. Like, they're like, man, you look old. I said, this is just from the inauguration, bro. I was all black before the inauguration. But, you know, Donald Trump does give you good things to talk about. You know, if your lady says, you know, where were you? You know, I tried to call you, and then you just had to say, listen, I can't answer those questions. I'm under audit.
You get some really good ideas.
I can't show
from
you
some
my
people,
phone. I'm being audited.
Well, I know your birthday is coming up on the 23rd. And how are you going to be celebrating? Are you somebody who's like, are you a big birthday person, or you just let it come and go?
Well, you know, I in the family I grew up in, I wasn't a big birthday person. So, but I think every year should be celebrated. And I wouldn't want to let it come and go. So I may have to celebrate. You know, Prince, who I knew and I gave a gift to, and he says, I'm a Jehovah's Witness. You know, I don't accept gifts. And I said, well, you know, then we kind of talked about something else. He kept looking at the box, and I said, you should at least take a look at it. He goes, George, I told you I can't accept gifts. I said, just look at it. You know, look at it. Goes over, lifts the top up. It's wrapped in white paper. He removes one of those crepe paper things out of the way, and he sees a feather pops up. And he looks at me, and I said, uh-huh. I said, look at it. He opens it up. It's purple, like a fedora with a long feather, handmade. He looks at it, turns it around, looks at it again, flicks the brim with his index finger, which if anybody that's worn a hat is pretty much when you're tapping out. And he hit it, put it on, put it sideways, and walked up and back like George Jefferson, kind of cool like that. And I said, I thought you couldn't accept gifts. And he said, oh, no, I'm keeping this.
So just don't consider it a birthday
gift. Yeah.
Maybe
it's just a being gift. Yeah.
Something I just dropped off
at
your house.
Another incredible person who, you know, I got a chance to spend a little bit of time around.
Yeah, you spent some time around a lot of people who love you right back.
Thank you.
Including all the fans that you have. But I do have one last thing I want to ask you about. Recently, you know, I have a sports podcast now. It's called This Lady Loves Sports.
Yeah.
You got to come and do it one day.
I would love to do it.
But I did an interview with these guys from the Advanced Professional Golf Association who are, what they do is they try to promote minorities in golf.
Right.
They expose young kids and also people who are trying to get on the tour who don't have sponsorship.
Sure.
They're trying to help some of these people. And Tony Finau is one of the people who they have assisted.
Amazing.
But after I did the interview, they called me and said they had a gift for me. They brought me a bag and clubs, and they're giving me 3 free lessons. So I would like to know, what is your advice as I begin my journey in golf?
Okay. You don't hit at the ball. You hit through the ball. Okay, that's number one. You don't stop at the ball. Your thing is to swing through it. As if somebody were sweeping, you don't get to the dirt and stop. You go back, and it's very rhythm. You push through it, back and through. 1, 2. 1 here and 2 at the bottom. So swinging, golf is like life. The harder you try, the less successful you'll be. And when you just let it go and swing through the ball, that feeling of when you hit something solid like that, there's no second feeling in the world like that. And I'm gonna tell you this, when you take your lessons, between now and the Playboy Jazz Festival. I'm a member at a club, and we will play on a day that you're off on Sunday.
I would love to play.
Okay.
I would love to play. I'm very excited about it now.
It's a great game. It changed my life. It showed me the flaws in my character and my personality, and I didn't have an actual...
And how did you do that?
Because my baseball coach in high school said that when things got tough for me, I quit, and I didn't believe that. And when I started playing golf 3 years after we had this big fight, he and I, and... I did quit when it got tough, and I made excuses for myself. Like, I'd tell these guys, hey, I'm going to take off. I got something to do later on. I didn't. It just got frustrated, and I quit. And you frustrate yourself and you quit, you get nowhere. And golf made me understand that things are tough, and to not quit and to keep going. And I don't always play great, but I never lose my temper. I never lose my composure. And golf taught me that.
So it's actually like a game that's kind of a metaphor for life.
It's a metaphor for life. You don't need to, I was an only child, so it was something I could do by myself. And I'm going to play this afternoon.
That's cool. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it's a
beautiful game. People look at it, it seems like almost like a religious experience for people who love to play golf.
Well, there is a camaraderie. There's a friendship. I don't think you could spend 5 hours with somebody in a restaurant, but playing golf, you could, and it would reveal a lot about it. And plus, when I first started to play, there's rakes all over the place, and I thought, what Latino wouldn't want to play golf? There's just these rakes.
You feel right at home.
All water hoses and rakes, and you're like, wow, a nozzle, nobody knows this. My grandfather was loved to water the grass, and then I said, what? He's always watering the grass. When I bought my own house, I would go out and water and think. And I was playing at a country club here in Los Angeles, and it had a nozzle that looked amazing, and I took the nozzle. And it was amazing. I watered my grass with that same nozzle. But I think paying my dues, I've more than purchased 1,000 nozzles for the one that I have borrowed.
Exactly. Come on now. You got to realize
most
that.
Most people wouldn't even look at the nozzle. We drove by to go get the golf ball. I said, man, back up, man. Did you see that nozzle? And the guy's like, that's a pretty good looking nozzle right there.
Every bit of good treatment that you get at that golf course, yes, you have paid for it. You know, that's the truth.
Yeah.
Well, George, it's always good to see
you. Man, thank you, Pat.
And looking forward to seeing you at the Bowl for the Playboy Jazz Festival. I would not miss it. It's like family reunion.
It definitely is like family reunion. People bring, that's right. They bring their families out there, and daughters bring their fathers, and it's always a great weekend. It's the temperature and the weather is perfect, and the music is unbelievable.
Yeah, a lot of movie deals being made, too. A lot of other stuff like that happening.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for taking time, stopping by.
I love you, Pat. It's great.
George Lopez with us on 94.7 The Wave. We'll see you at Playboy.
Beautiful.
Yeah.